All right, so we'll get started, and with the thunderstorm outside, we'll see how many people come. But it's Baruch Hashem. All right, Parshas Devarim, Tavshin Ayin Tes, Shabbos Chazon. We begin the Mishneh Torah, the final book of the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu's Musar Shmuz to Klal Yisrael before his death. So a quick summary, as we always do. The Parsha begins on Aleph Shvat, right, 37 days before Zayin Adar of that year, when Moshe would die, and Klal Yisrael stood by Eber HaYarden, poised to enter Eretz Yisrael. That's where Dvarim begins. That's where they are. Moshe gathers all of Klal Yisrael together to review all the events and the lessons of the last 40 years, everything from the Musar over the Averos they and their parents committed, to a review of the mitzvos they've already learned, you know, in some cases with a little bit more color to them. Moshe takes a stroll down memory lane. He recalls how Klal Yisrael became too big for him to manage by himself. Eicha eso levadi tarchechem masachem v'rivchem. The famous Lashon of Eicha appearing here in our Parsha for the first time, and we'll get into the penimius of that. Moshe recalls the appointment of the Zekanim and the judges to help him manage the workload. He then moves to the Chet HaMeraglim. We review that and the Gzera that generation would all die out in the Midbar as a result. And we'll get into the retelling of the story of the Meraglim, what it teaches us Dafka here, Dafka now, why we repeat the story of the Meraglim here. Moshe recalls the tragic story of the Mapilim, who made a failed run into Eretz Yisrael, like we spoke about a few weeks ago. And then he fast forwards to the present. He recalls the pretty recent wars against Sichon and Og, the kings of Emori and Boshan, and how their lands were captured and they were destined to be inhabited by Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Menashe. And Moshe then reiterates the chi of those Shvatim have to help the rest of Klal Yisrael settle Eretz Yisrael before they can return to their families in Eber HaYarde, right? Ad Asher Aniach Hashem La'acheichem Kachem V'yarshu Gam Hemes Ha'aretz Asher Hashem Elokeichem Nosein Lahem Be'Eber HaYarde, right? And finally, in the Parsha, Moshe urges Klal Yisrael at the leadership of Yoshua to not fear the inevitable wars that they'll encounter upon entering Eretz Yisrael, because very simply, Ki Hashem Elokeichem Hu Hanilcham Lachem. Hashem will fight the wars for you, and those nations standing against you in Eretz Yisrael will meet the same fate as Sichon and Og. That's Parshas Devarim. That's the beginning of Moshe's final words of Chizik to Klal Yisrael, which, as we'll see, will stretch over many, many Parshios. They stretched over 37 days till Zayin Adar. So let's get right into it and try to highlight a few key inyanim here, both in relation to the Parsha itself in a silo, but also as it relates to this Tekufa of the year. Tisha B'Av and Shabbos Chazon find many, many resting places in this Parsha, and we'll discuss that and sprinkle in those inyanim as well. So to start off tonight, we know the Medrash and Chazal speak about at length. Chumash Dvarim is referred to as Mishneh Torah, right? A study of Torah, however you want to translate it, a review of Torah. So why the name? As the Medrash writes, it's because Dvarim, the Medrash says, Shumale halachos rabos. Dvarim teaches us many halachos, right? The whole book is saturated with halacha, so therefore it's referred to as Mishneh Torah. Very practical, very straightforward. But just let's dig a little bit deeper. What's the essence of Sefer Dvarim? It's the most unique Sefer in all of Chumash. Clearly, there are many differences in both substance, but also in style. Lashon Rabban versus Lashon Yachid, we'll talk about in a second. So I want to explore, why does Sefer Dvarim exist? Why don't we have these halachos prior to now as part of the overall story of Bnei Yisrael in the first four books of the Torah? And so what's Sefer Dvarim coming to teach us? So many different answers. The Ramban in his Akdama here says basically Dvarim is a repetition of the first four books of Chumash, right? It's a reiteration of the halachos. And yes, there are some new elements and some new mitzvos. He says things like Yibum and Motzi Shemra and Gerishin and Edom Zomimim are all new halachos within Sefer Dvarim. But really, these mitzvos are only expansions of mitzvos we've already learned. So everything that appears new in Sefer Dvarim has already been alluded to earlier in the Torah in some shape or form. So the question is, if they've been learned earlier, but Derech Remez, then why are we giving us all the details now? Let's go through the sugya earlier in the Torah when they first come up at Derech Remez. So there are many answers. Some say, the Ramban says, it's either because these mitzvos are relevant to Eretz Yisrael, so the Torah holds off until now, we're close to entering Eretz Yisrael, so we do all the details here, or because they're less tadir, they're less frequent, so the Torah also decides to hold off onto the details until now because these are less frequent in Yonim that are found within Sefer Dvarim. That's the Ramban. A second approach is based on the Maral in Tiferes Yisrael. We know the Sefer begins, Ela Dvarim Asher Diber Moshe El Kol Yisrael. That this Sefer came from who? It came from Moshe's personal narrative, his final speech, as opposed to the rest of the Torah, which is Hashem's narrative. It says, the rest of the Torah, it's Vayidaber Hashem El Moshe Lemor. It's Hashem's narrative. And this reality is found elsewhere throughout Sefer Dvarim, specifically typically wear by the tochacha. In the Gemara Megillah, Daf Lamed Aleph teaches that in Kisavo, the tochacha is beloshon yachid, indicative of it came from Moshe mipi atzmo. Versus a few weeks ago in Bechukosai, in Sefer Vayikra, the tochacha is beloshon rabim, indicative of that it was coming from Moshe, but it's mipi agvur. He's a conduit directly from Hashem. So the Maral explains, how do we understand this? The first four books of Chumash, says the Maral, Moshe was simply a mouthpiece for Hashem. Shechina midaberes mitoch grono. It was almost literally like hearing the voice of Hashem. Versus in Mishneh Torah, in Devarim, Moshe was communicating more like a typical Navi. Hashem would tell him something, and the next day he would give a shir to repeat what he heard. A shir, you know, he'd give a sicha to repeat over what Hashem had told him. So why was this important? And says the Maral, because Hashem was weaning them off of the nevuah that was specific to Moshe Rabbeinu. He was transitioning them from the type of nevuah they'd experience after his death, with Yeshua and so forth, and the subsequent Nevi'im in Eretz Yisrael. So in other words, Sefer Devarim, says the Maral, is different in style, because it was Hashem's way of preparing Klal Yisrael for after Moshe's death, and number two, for the type of nevuah they typically receive from Yeshua and subsequent Nevi'im. So Mishneh Torah is the perfect bridge between the first four books of Chumash and Nevi'im and Ksuvim, and Nach. Says the Maral. A third approach is offered by Rav Tzadok in Pritzadik, not here, but actually a few parshios from now in Kisavo. Also that Sefer Dvarim is a bridge, but not between the first four books of Chumash and Nach, but between Torah Biksav and Torah Baal Peh. That the first parts of Chumash, the first four books, were direct from Hashem, no filter. But in Dvarim, Moshe, for the first time in Chumash, was genuinely serving as the middleman. For the first time, he was given free rein to interpret and speak openly in his own words to Klal Yisrael about the Torah and the mitzvot they've been learning those 40 years, which is a precursor to all of Torah Shebaal Peh to follow, that Chazal and Rabbanim until this day serve in that same capacities. They are the middlemen between the Ratzon Hashem and the Tzibur. So, in other words, Hashem took Sefer Dvarim, which is a Torah Shebaal Peh like Sefer, says Rav Tzadok, and in that it's Moshe's interpretation of halacha, Moshe's interpretation of the Ratzon Hashem in his own words. Hashem is taking those words, those human words of Moshe Rabbeinu, and canonizing it as part of Torah Shebiksav. It's making Moshe Rabbeinu's words into the fifth and final book of Chumash to teach us a very important lesson, to teach us the importance of our Rabbanim, the words of our Rabbanim, that today, all the way dating back to Moshe Rabbeinu, they're binding, as if they were written by Hashem himself in the Torah Mamish. To remind us that Torah Shebaal Peh is lo b'shamayim hi, right? It's lo b'shamayim, but rather it's for our Rabbanim to help us make the connection between the Ratzon Hashem and the Tzibur. And chas v'shalom, we should ever view Torah Shebaal Peh as lesser or something disconnected from the original source. Torah, right? Sefer Dvarim is teaching us that this was Moshe's time to maybe editorialize a little bit, but that is also a book of Chumash, teaching us the importance of Torah Shebaal Peh. That's Rav Tzadok. That's the message of Sefer Dvarim. And a final note on Sefer Dvarim b'chlal before we get into it. There's a pasuk in Shmuel Beis that refers to a book called Sefer HaYoshar. And the Gemara in Avodah Zarah talks about this on Chaf Hayamid Aleph, gives several possibilities of what is this Sefer HaYoshar. One of them, Rabbi Lazar says, it refers to Mishneh Torah, to Sefer Dvarim, based on the pasuk contained within this Sefer, V'asisa HaYoshar V'hato B'nei Hashem. So the obvious question is, according to Rabbi Lazar, why would the word appearing once in a pasuk be enough for the whole Sefer to be named, you know, Sefer HaYoshar, and then that name is pervading enough to warrant it be used later in Tanakh in Shmuel Beis. So the Maharsha Shah on this Gemara in Avodah Zarah says an amazing thing. And we mentioned the first four books of Torah comprise all of halacha, the do's and the don'ts, the instruction manual for daily life. But Sefer Dvarim, says the Maharsha Shah, is meant to unify all of those details into something that's greater than the sum of their parts. And that is a yashar. V'asisa ha-yashar v'ato b'nei Hashem. Dvarim is an instruction manual on how to be a Jew. Not the X's and O's, that we already have. That's in the first four Sfarim. But rather, how to live above and beyond those details. How to live a life that's upright and good in the eyes of Hashem. V'asisa ha-yashar v'ato b'nei Hashem. Within the construct of yashrus. An interesting nafka mina, I saw in one of Rav Weinberger's Sfarim, Rav Weinberger from Woodmere, the Gemara in Yevamos says that typically we aren't Doresh Smuchim, right? What does that mean? Because the Torah is not in chronological order, we can't learn things out simply from the juxtaposition of Psukim next to one another. The exception, when we are Doresh Smuchim, when it appears in Sefer Dvarim, right? There, Yehuda held in the Gemara that we can be Doresh Smuchim, the Gemara in Yevamos. Why? Because since Dvarim is Sefer HaYashar, where everything is connected under this construct of Yashrus, there, since Dvarim has this unique cohesiveness to it. There, says, you know, says Weinberger, there we can be Dorish Smuchim. That's his interpretation of the Gemara there, when they appear within this Sefer. So it's an interesting nafkamina, that Dvarim is different in style, and a nafkamina would be whether we can be Dorish Smuchim, better, as opposed to the rest of the Torah, which is more disparate, disconnected in Yonim. Dvarim has a certain sense of cohesiveness to it. So in summary, lots of mahalchim, lots of lessons to the uniqueness of Sefer Dvarim, different type of mitzvos, different types of nevuah, transitions between Torah and Navi, transitions between Torah Shebiksav and Torah Shebal Peh. But the overarching lesson, I think, is Dvarim being the ultimate Musar Sefer, right? This mysterious Sefer HaYoshar, which per the Masha is not so it's not so mysterious anymore. Dvarim is here to help us take the first four books of the Torah, to take all the, you know, the thou shalts and the thou shalt nots, which can by itself can seem a bit robotic, and transform that into the persona of a Jewish person. Not a Jew who lives to fulfill the X's and the O's, but rather a Jew of Yashrus, whose goal in life is to make Hashem proud. And Mirat Hashem, we should always strive to transform ourselves into those types of Mishneh Torah Jews, of Sefer Dvarim Jews, and in that pursuit, be zocha to nothing but bracha v'atzlacha in everything we do. So that's A. B, in this week's parsha, the Torah introduces Moshe's Musar Shmuz with the following words: Eila Dvarim Asher Diber Moshe El Kol Yisrael. So that's pretty straightforward, right? Introducing the words that will follow. The pasuk always introduces the words Vayidaber Hashem El Moshe Lemor Eila Dvarim Asher Diber Moshe. Right? We introduce the upcoming section of the Torah with a few words. That's typical. But the pasuk continues by giving us the location of the shmuz. Be'aver hayardin be'midbar bo'arava mol suf bein paron vein tofel v'lovan v'chatzeros v'dizahov. Why are the GPS coordinates? Why are the GPS coordinates why are they critical for us to know here? So Rashi addresses this question and says very poshut. Lefi shehin divrei tochachos umanakan kol makomo shechisu lefnei amakom behen. Moshe is about to rip them to give them some musar and remind them of all the times they messed up and angered Hashem. The fikach sasam es advarim v'skirim beremez b'nei kvodon shal Yisrael. He only alludes to it, but derech remez, in the spirit of Kavod HaTzibur. And these places, these GPS coordinates, are allusions to those events in the Midbar. Bamidbar, says Rashi, is a reference to all the complaining. Miyutein Musenu. Bo'arava is reference to Baal Pa'or, which occurred where? In Shittim, which was in Aravos Moav, Ba'arava. Molsuf is a reference to when they complained by the Yamsuf, right? Hamibli ain't Kivar b'Mitzrayim. There aren't enough graves in Mitzrayim. Bein Paron uvein Tofel is a reference to the Mun and the Meraglim. Chatzeros is a reference to Korach. And finally, Dizov is a reference to the Egel Hazav. So according to Rashi, this was Moshe's way of easing into an otherwise uncomfortable conversation that was about to follow, Mipi Kvodon Shel Yisrael. So he uses the various locations to allude to those shortcomings. But there's a beautiful sefer in the name of Rav Nachman called Shulchan Shabbos. I couldn't find the sefer actually in print, but I used the references. He asked the same question: why do we need the GPS coordinates of this Moshe's Musar Shmuz to Klal Yisrael? And he bases it on a famous yesod in Likutei Maran, which I did put on the Marma Komos, where he says as follows: we all know the famous Mishnah in Perkei Avos. Mishnah in Perkei Avos says, "Al todin es chavercha ad shetagia limkomo." Don't judge your fellow person until you put yourself in his circumstances, until you've arrived in his place, or it's been remade in English, right? The saying goes in English, before you criticize a man, you know, walk a mile in his shoes, right? Walk a mile in his shoes. So, yes, he's seemingly being Michal Shabbos and, you know, whatever it is, but do you really understand his childhood? Do you understand the building blocks that turned him into the person that you're looking at today? Not a chance. So the Mishnah Avos implores us to think about this before we judge someone for a situation that we certainly cannot fully comprehend, right? Do we understand his family situation, his money, his shalom bias, his health? And if we did, would we think so poorly of the person? Probably not. So Rav Nachman uses this yesod in Perkei Avos to answer our question. What's the connection? So I'll give an example. Have you ever had I was thinking about this, putting together this piece. Have you ever had an experience where someone just rubbed you the wrong way? You know, someone, maybe you didn't have a relationship with this person, you kind of observe them from a distance, but something about them just doesn't seem right. They seem phony or unfriendly or condescending, so you just keep your distance. And then later in life, as Hashem has it, that, you know, maybe this person goes their separate way, and then, you know, 10 years later, that person moves in on your block, or that person starts davening at your shul, or that person starts working in the same office building as you. And because of proximity, you get to know the person a little bit better. And then you realize, this guy's a great guy. You know, I always thought of him when I saw him from afar. He's phony. He's not. But when I get to know him really up and close, this person's a phenomenal person. And you have guilt over the fact that you thought poorly of this person before you actually walked a mile in his shoes, before you got to know the person and really understand him. Because once you do, you realize what a tremendous person he is, right? So that's the mission in Pirkei Avos. Al tadin es chavercha ad shetagia limkomo. You have no right to think ill of somebody until you really get to know them on a genuine, deep, personal level, right? So, therefore, and the only person who can is Hashem, because Hashem is the only person who's tagia limkomo. That's why Hashem is called hamakom, because Hashem is everywhere, and therefore, Hashem being in this person's makom, Hashem can truly judge a person. But us, not being in that makom, we have no right to judge. So therefore, let's get back to our question. The question was, why do we give the coordinate, the GPS coordinates of Moshe Rabbeinu's Musar Shmuz, Bamidbar, Bar, Rava, Mol Suf, Bein Paranu, Bein Tofel, why do we care where it was? So Rabbi Nachman says, the Torah prefaces Moshe's talk with the coordinates. Why? To remind us, right? Tavshin Ayin Tes, observers of this Musher Shmuz, right? Tavshin Ayin Tes, students of the Torah who just read and gave numerous chaburas in, you know, diving into all the panemius of the horrible shortcomings in Sefer Bamidbar. The Torah is reminding us here in our time that before we do our Monday morning quarterbacking on the Dor HaMidbar, have we been to these places? Have we been to Bamidbar, to Mol Suf, to Lavan v'Chatzeros? Do we understand what it was like to be Ba'arava? Would we have done any better if we were part of the Dor HaMidbar? Right? Would we have done any better if faced by the same challenges and experiences that they had to go through? Unlikely. Pretty unlikely. Al tadin es chavercha ad shetagia limkomo. So the Torah is reminding us something very critical. Don't think that the messages and the musar of Sefer Bamidbar was for the Dor HaMidbar. They're for us too. They apply to us as well. Just as much so that when we put ourselves in Chatzeros, when we put ourselves in Bo'ar Ravah and Mol Suf and Dizahav, we'd have been just as guilty. So that's Rabbi Nachman's very powerful and very appropriate introduction to Sefer Dvarim, to Mishneh Torah. And once we understand that with a full realization, Be'etzem, we're now ready to keep reading. And that's why the GPS coordinates are here, to remind us to put ourselves in that makom before we go further. So, Mirz Hashem, we can embody this. To Chas V'Shalom, put ourselves on a pedestal over our fellow Jews. Al tadin es chavercha ad shetagia limkomo. And in that schus, we should be zocha to the myriad of brachos within Sefer Dvarim, of which we'll see in the next few weeks there are many. And be zocha, you know, for us and our families, to tremendous siyata d'shmaya in all our endeavors. So, one of the obvious connections that people make from our parsha of Dvarim to the Yontiv of Tisha B'Av that it always coincides with is the Lashon of Eicha in our parsha making its first appearance, and of course Megillas Eicha, which we'll read on Leil Tisha B'Av. But that's really just the tip of the iceberg. Eicha is a word which is rarely ever used in Tanakh, but here it seems to pop up all over the place. It says, it's also in the Haftorah this week, right? And Eicha in all three places is not only just Eicha, but it's also read in the Trup of Megillas Eicha, in the Tisha B'Av Trup. And these connections have many different layers to them. We'll discuss the Meraglim, and also, you know, the Meraglim takes us back to the original chait of Tisha B'Av, Atem Bechisem Bechiyam Shel Chinam, right? Klal Yisrael cried that night for no reason, so Hashem gave us Tisha B'Av to give us something to genuinely cry over. And there are numerous other connectors between our Parsha and Tisha B'Av, but for tonight, just want to focus on the Lashon of Eicha. That's all I want to focus on. So let's go in chronological order. The first mention of Eicha in our Parsha is said by Moshe Rabbeinu in this week's Parsha. Eicha Eso Levadi Tarchechem U'Masachem V'Rivchem, read in the trup of Megillas Eicha. He's recounting his earlier complaint that how can I carry this nation by myself? They're too big, they're too complex, they have too many shilas. Moshe Rabbeinu was overwhelmed. This is not a one-person job. And therefore, based on the advice of Yisro, we have the Zekanim and the judges to help offset this burden and to adjudicate all of the lesser cases without having to overburden Moshe Rabbeinu. That's Eicha in our Parsha. A Lashon of it's too much work. So then in the Haftorah, continuing chronologically, the term is used again by Yishayahu HaNavi. Eicha haisa lezona kirya nemona. He's lamenting that how is it possible that Klal Yisrael has strayed so badly that now they're like a zona. At the time in our history, it was a generation. This was one generation before the Churban, before the first Churban. And Klal Yisrael was clearly entrenched in some bad stuff. And Yishayahu was pleading with them to get out of it now, to get out of the muck before it's too late and before Yerushalayim, the Beis Hamikdash, would be destroyed. That's Eicha in the Haftorah. And finally, we have the Eicha of Megillas Eicha from Yirmiyahu. Eicha Yashva Badad Ha'ir Abasiyam Haisa Kalmana. Woe unto the city of Yerushalayim. Once it was populous, but now it's sitting by itself lonely like an almana. So Yirmiyahu is writing about the Churban and the atrocities that he saw in the aftermath of the Churban. And he says, because we didn't listen to the Eicha of Yishayahu in our Haftorah, that's why we have to bear witness to the Eicha of Yirmiyahu. And what's interesting is the Medrash Eicha here in Yirmiyahu, on this episode here, links these three Eichas. They're all linked in the Medrash into one narrative. Says the Medrash, it's comparable to a Isha, to a woman with three friends. Echad ro'osa b'shelusa, echad ro'osa b'pachzusa, v'echad ro'osa b'nivula. Right? One saw her when things were going pretty good, one saw her when things were on the downward trajectory, and one saw her in her humiliation, her disgrace, b'nivula. So too here, Moshe saw Klal Yisrael in a peaceful time, right, in a good time. Yishayahu saw Klal Yisrael on the downward trajectory, and Yirmiyahu saw them in their disgrace. So says the Medrash, that's the mashal of the three Eichas. But what does this mean? What does this mean? What does this mean that, you know, Moshe saw them in their good time? So Pashup Shat is that when we see from how high we came, from the level of the Dor HaMidbar, when we compare the Dor HaMidbar to the Churban, we can see a stark difference. We can see how far we came and understand how far we've fallen to make Avera seem that much more powerful. But that seems like a hazy connection being made, because even Moshe was complaining, right? Even Moshe was saying, Eicha Esa Levadi. So we're saying Eicha Esa Levadi is a high level, is a level of beauty. He's complaining. He's saying it's too much for me. So I don't love that answer so much. So let's go a bit deeper. There's another answer I saw, a beautiful answer from the Meshech Chachma that asks the same question, but the Meshech Chachma gives a much more optimistic view than is typical for a Tisha B'Av Dvar Torah. And he says as follows. We know very famously, we've seen this many times in this Chabura, that the essence of something, whatever we're talking about, the essence of something can be learned from its first appearance in the Torah. Right? If you want to know about something, go to the first time it's mentioned in the Torah, and that's where its essence is contained. So who was the first person to use Eicha? It was Moshe Rabbeinu, we just said. And in what context did he use it? So at first blush, you'd say it's negative, that these people are putting me, you know, and putting, you know, Eicha Esa Levadi, this is an unmanageable burden for one person. So says Meshech Chachma, that's not so. The fact that Moshe needed help managing the day-to-day items that came up, that first Eicha of Eicha Salivadi stemmed from a very optimistic view that Moshe Rabbeinu had. Why was he so overwhelmed? Because Hashem fulfilled his promise. Hashem had given Klal Yisrael the bracha of children, of pruvu, of growing from a nation of 70 people when they entered Mitzrayim into a few million when they left, right? 600,000 was just the men between, you know, over the age of 20, but they were a couple million if you include the women and the children, right? So of course Moshe needed help to tend to all the ruchnius needs of these people. This wasn't a curse. It wasn't a bad thing. It was like, you know, a mother being home by herself with a dozen kids. It's not a bad, she needs help. She could use a part-time babysitter, but it's not a bad thing. You know, halavai, we should all have those types of difficult times. So, you know, that should be the worst thing. So Moshe's Eicha was not a woe is me. Eicha Esa Levadi was not woe is me. It was a Baruch Hashem Eicha, right? An Eicha of a tired but ultimately very happy parent. So that being the case, the origins of Eicha, the first time it appears, is a bracha, not a klala. So as Klal Yisrael grows, we continually need leaders to step up and maintain the health of the tzibur. That's the pnimius of what Eicha means. Eicha was Moshe Rabbeinu's bracha that Klal Yisrael should never get to a point where one person can manage them all by themselves. So this is the Meshech Chachma's point. If that's what the first Eicha was about, as constructed by Moshe Rabbeinu himself, then this is also what the pnimius of the Eicha of Yishayahu and Yirmiyahu are talking about as well. That yes, Klal Yisrael was going through tough times by Yishayahu, and certainly they were going through tough times in the times of Yirmiyahu and the Churban. But amidst all of that sadness, they preface it in the Haftorah and then in Megillas Eicha with the Lashon of Eicha, to allude to the bracha of Moshe Rabbeinu from many generations earlier, that despite all the sadness, despite all the death and destruction and the difficulties of those times, Klal Yisrael is still here, Klal Yisrael is still alive, and Klal Yisrael, Meretz Hashem, will always continue to thrive. Says the Meshech Chachma, that's the chizuk of Eicha, that it's not a woe is me, it's a reminder of our nitzchias, a reminder of Hashem's love for us, that we continue to thrive until this day. So Meretz Hashem, we can take a little bit of a Tisha B'Av chizuk from this, that, you know, the deepest message of Eicha is to remember that despite the troubles and the difficulties that we go through, you know, whether it be for us personally or collectively as a tzibur, Hashem always stands with us like he did with our ancestors long ago. And Meretz Hashem will continue to grow and to thrive. And yes, Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, absolutely, we could use, just like Moshe Rabbeinu, we could use Eicha Esa Levadi, a little bit of Siyata Dishmaya, an extra helping of Parnasa and Yeshua, right? The proverbial extra set of hands of Eicha Esa Levadi, but we should all daven for that. And Meretz Hashem, Bezer Hashem, that should be the worst of our problems. So, as we've mentioned, Sefer Dvarim is also known as Mishneh Torah. And one reason for that, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu, in his last speech before he died, used it as an opportunity, amongst other things, to chazer. Right, Mishneh Torah, we said, I mean, one of the things that this is the time the chazer are the first four books of the Torah, to review different elements that Klal Yisrael had already seen, maybe had some exposure to, maybe to add a little bit more color to it, a little bit more density to it. The Pasuk says, Be'ever ha'yardein be'eretz Moav, ho'il Moshe be'eretz ha'tarah zos le'mor. By the shores of the Yardein, by Moav, Moshe chazered over the Torah for Klal Yisrael. So this is a very short Rashi here, just a couple words. He adds an additional element to this pasuk. He quotes the Medrash. It says, Be'eretz ha'tarah b'shivim lashon per shalahem. When Moshe did this chazara, his final parting words, he did each one 70 times, one per each language of the world of that time. So the question's why? Number one, did Moshe, you know, Klal Yisrael did every single person in Klal Yisrael speak 70 languages? No. So except, this was clearly lost on them, most of them, except when they were speaking in Lashon HaKodesh or maybe when he was speaking in Egyptian, but they didn't speak these languages. And also this method made things take 70 times longer than they should have had. So there's tremendous, if you're a Tircha D'Tzibur Jew, that this is tremendous Tircha D'Tzibur, that he's giving every shiur 70 times in 69 languages that you, the listener, don't understand. Imagine that. If the Rav gives a shiur on Shabbos, you understand it, then he does it 69 more times in Farsi and in this and that and everything. No one understands. Tremendous Tircha D'Tzibura. So why? Why did Moshe feel the need to burden everybody with B'Shivim Lashon Per Shalahem? Many different answers here. You know, some of them, some say it's because there are 70 ways to learn the Torah. So Moshe was pointing that out, all the different nuances. Some say it's Moshe's way of demonstrating that Torah is meant for everybody, in every generation, in every country, in every language. There isn't just one flavor of Jew. Numerous other answers. But I want to focus on just the Chiddush Arim, the answer brought down by the first Ger Rebbe. He answers this question, gives a beautiful answer. Also, the same idea is spoken out in the Kedushas Levi by the Berdichever. And he says that Moshe Rabbeinu, via a nevuah from Hashem, knew that at some time in the future, Klal Yisrael would spend a good amount of time in Golus, you know, amongst people speaking these alien languages. And each of the 70 languages over time has been used to belittle and to persecute Klal Yisrael. And that continues to this day, therefore. And in that regard, Moshe, the Torah was now retaught by Moshe Rabbeinu in the beginning of Sefer Dvarim in every language to give chizuk to each generation of Jews that no matter where you find yourself, the Torah has preceded you to that place, is waiting for you when you arrive, right? In every corner of the globe, in every language of this planet, there's a spark of Kedusha, and therefore no one should ever feel that they're distant from the Torah, regardless of where you are. And the Kedushas Levi adds, you know, we all know there are words in the Torah that are in Aramaic, phrases like Yigar Sahadusa, that's when Lavan and Yaakov part ways. The Torah, there's, you know, the word of Totafos is an African word, as we talked about, you know, talking about Tefillin, and the list goes on. There are several other, you know, there are other places where there are actually Greek words that are thrown into Tanakh. So says the Kedushas Levi, the reason the Torah did this, that we have some African and Greek and Aramaic, is that, you know, when the Jew finds himself in Gullus, in Africa, in Greece, or Arabia, wherever, and hears these words that are familiar to his native tongue, it's meant to give him chizik that Hashem has followed him to these places, that Hashem has preceded him to these places, lest he think he's in some godless, you know, alien world. To show the Jew in Golos, right? Tzarech levar ator b'chol halashonos, kidei l'kayim Yisrael b'golos. That's it. That's the reason why he's in 70 languages. You know, I heard a great joke about how the creators of the ABCs were Jews. The creators of the English language were actually Jews. And I don't know if it's true, but this is the story I heard. And they wanted to inject some Kedusha into the English language, just like we see here. There's Kedusha in every language. That's why Moshe spoke it out in 70 languages. So they wanted to inject some Kedusha into the English language. So how'd they do it? So I heard, actually heard this from Rabbi Krohn's son in Passaic. He says, L-M-N, the letter is L-M-N, so L, like Hashem, M, if you say that Hashem only has a mother, M, then N, it's not so. Hashem only has a mother referring to Christianity. N, it's not so. Ah, but if you don't believe that, if you don't believe, or if you say in could mean in, like yes, like in the Gemara, if you think that, oh, maybe Hashem only, maybe the God only has a mother, then O-P-Q-R-S, then Apikoros. That's they're trying to inject some Kedusha into the English language. So that's a joke. But the point is that there, in every language, every corner of the world, every dark place, there is some Kedusha to be found. And that's the premise of why Moshe Rabbeinu injected this into the said over Devarim in 70 languages. So it's a short point, but you know, Amir Tashem, you know, if we can live our daily lives with that recognition as a point of chiyas and chizuk, then we should be zochet to have our lives be a little bit brighter and warmer wherever we may find ourselves. So like we mentioned, moving on, that Moshe's big speech rehashes a lot of the prior averos that we saw in Bamidbar, one of which is the Chet Meraglim, right? 40 years earlier, another subtle reference to Tisha B'Av in our Parsha, we talk about the Meraglim. The Pasuk says, "Vatikrevune lai kulchem vatomru nishlucha nashim lefanenu v'yachperu lanu es ha'aretz." Klal Yisrael came to Moshe and demanded that they send spies to scout out Yisrael, to which Rashi says that they came to him birbuvia. They all jumbled together. The young pushed the old out of the way, and the old pushed the leaders out of the way. It was a whole balagan. So says the Emes Liakov, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, that this lack of derech eretz, birbuvia, was not really what they did wrong. That wasn't Moshe's complaint. Yes, it was a mob mentality, and yes, it was a balagan. The young were the instigators pushing the old, but that wasn't the crux of the issue. Says the Emes Liakov that Birbuvia was only a symptom of the larger problem. What was the larger problem? It was a lack of emunah. It was a lack of bitachon. That they were afraid to take the leap into Eretz Yisrael. They lacked that conviction that it would work out. And in the aftermath of the Makos, in the aftermath of Kriyas Yamsuf, in the aftermath of Maimon Har Sinai, they shouldn't have needed to go the typical routes of reconnaissance to believe that Hashem would help them. The fact that we saw the ocean split should have been enough of a proof that they didn't need Meraglim. So the fact that they wanted to go the typical military reconnaissance route, despite the supernatural existence that they were living, showed a lack of bitachon on their part. Right? The fact that they didn't put two and two together was an egregious lack of bitachon. And it says here, v'emes heim mifachtim v'yireim l'gorolam. They were afraid. They were afraid. And that's what Moshe was trying to get across to remind their children of 40 years later, to not make the same mistakes as their parents. Al tirov al techas. Don't fear taking the leap. Have emunah that Hashem is making the jump with you. The question is that if this was the underlying issue, a lack of bitachon is not a small thing. Then why did Moshe go along with it? Right, the next pasuk says, "Vayitav be'enai hadavar." Moshe says it was good in my eyes. "Ve'ekach mikem shnei masar nashim ish echad l'shavet." It looked good to me, so I took 12 men and I sent them out to scout the land. If it was a lack of emunah, it was a lack of bitachon, Moshe shouldn't have gone along with it. He should have said, "No, you're lacking bitachon. You're lacking in emunah. We're not doing this." But he says, "Vayitav be'enai hadavar." It was good. How could it look good to Moshe Rabbeinu? How was a lack of emunah bitachon something that looked good to Moshe Rabbeinu? So answers the Emes Liakov based on the Ramban, famous Ramban that we actually spoke about this Ramban in B'chu Kosai, the famous philosophical question, right? If we believe so strongly in Hashem that He alone is guiding our lives, then what right do we have to go to the doctor when we get sick? What right do we have to, you know, get life insurance? You can make up a million examples. If you really believe in Hashem, if He's controlling everything, then you should daven for a refuah. You should daven. You shouldn't need life insurance and a doctor. Why? Not only is there a reshus to go to a doctor, we have a chumrah, right? We mean mechal Shabbos to drive to the doctor on Shabbos. Why is that the case if we have a true emunah in Hashem? So says the Ramban says, Echanami, that if we had perfect emunah, there would be no need for doctors. There would be no need for life insurance. The fact that we have doctors and life insurance is a symptom of the fact that because we don't have a perfect emunah, Hashem tzilcha al yad minecha, Hashem is our shadow, right? That just like a shadow moves when we move, so too Hashem moves like we move. That if we feel we need doctors and we feel like we need life insurance, then Hashem makes the world so that we have doctors and we have life insurance. In other words, and that's why going to a doctor is not mutter, but it's even required, even to be mechal Shabbos. Because once the world operates in that manner with, let's call it 99% emunah, but not 100% emunah, we have an obligation to preserve life. But that's not the highest madrega. The highest madrega is 100% emunah, the loftiest plateau is to know with 100% certainty that Hashem is running the world. But because we're not there, we're not at that level, that's why we have doctors and life insurance. Yeah?
Yes, but if an individual has total emunah, then he shouldn't have to worry about it.
Right, so the Ramban's saying that doesn't exist. That mankind, by its nature, always has a spark of doubt. That's why I call it, let's say you have 99.999. The Ramban says a human cannot get to a point of 100%. Maybe Moshe Rabbeinu could, but in reality, I mean, practically speaking, you're right. If a person could somehow get to that madrega, then maybe yes, he shouldn't have to go to a doctor. He can just daven and everything will work out. But because we're not at that level, we have to do our ishtah. Listen, we have to go see a doctor if we're sick. We have to have, you know, make sure that our family is taken care of and have life insurance. Like things to these manners. So too here by the Meraglim. When they came to Moshe Rabbeinu, birbuvia, right? Why they come birbuvia? Because they lacked that 100% level of emunah, says, like the Emes Liakov says. So Moshe said, fine. Vayita beinai hadavar. If you don't have 100% emunah, then we need to operate within the physical realm, and we're going to need doctors, and we're going to need spies, and we're going to need to do this the way of a military, you know, campaign. So Moshe was maskim. This wasn't ideal. Maybe they, you know, ideally they should be able to do it supernaturally. They should just walk right into Eretz Yisrael, and everyone just dies around them. But because they weren't on that level, therefore they needed. That's why it was good in Moshe's eyes. All right, Lamaisa, we need spies. So the point being the following. The point is that Hashem echoes us, right? Hashem mirrors us. Hashem tzilcha al yad minyecha. To the extent that we bring Hashem into our lives, to the extent that we lean on Hashem, that's the extent that Hashem involves himself in our lives. No more and no less, right? To the extent that we have emunah, that's the extent that we don't need to worry about our physical and our practical worldly issues. And that's one of the many lessons of the Meraglim, and something for us to chew on in shaping our mindset on life and our mentality with Hashem. One final point on the Meraglim, later in the Parsha, when discussing the lands in Eber HaYarden that were conquered from Sichon and Og, the Pasuk says, Vesa'aretz hazos yarashnu ba'esahi. They were yoresh these lands at this time. So what does this mean? So the Netziv has a very famous pshat on here, that Moshe is giving them tremendous musr over here. What musr? Eze dover tochacha yotzuk bazeh. What musr is he giving them? He says that if Reuven and Gad never had taken Eber HaYarden, if they had gone into Eretz Yisrael with the rest of Klal Yisrael, the Eber HaYarden could do Shasa Kalam Eretz Yisrael. It's less Kadosh in Eber HaYarden. V'gam Koach HaTorah Ma'at Bekir Bo. There's less Koach HaTorah there. Then they wouldn't have been sent out to Golus earlier than the rest of Klal Yisrael. We know that 8 years earlier to the Churban, where Reuven and Gad were sent out into Golus themselves. But if they'd been in Eretz Yisrael, they wouldn't have been sent out to Golus prior. So fine, Shkoyach, but the Tziv goes further. If the Meraglim had never occurred, right? If the Meraglim had never occurred, where were they when the Meraglim occurred? They were Kadesh Barnea. If you look at a map of, you know, old, you look in the back of the stone Chumash, Kadesh Barnea is in the south of Eretz Yisrael. So if the Meraglim had not happened, they would have gone in through the south, through Kadesh Barnea, right? Who was in Kadesh Barnea? Who was bordering that? Was Edom. Edom at that time was terrified. Says in the Tziv, they were terrified of Klal Yisrael because the Makos had just happened and Kriyas Yamsuf had just happened and the Maimon Har Sinai just happened. So they would have gotten out of the way and Klal Yisrael would have walked right into Eretz Yisrael from the south and they would have divided up Eretz Yisrael and no one would have ever seen Eder HaYarden, which is the northeast. But because the Meraglim happened, and therefore they had to spend 40 years wandering in the desert, 40 years of wandering in the desert, Edom was no longer afraid of them. Their luster, that sheen had worn off, that fear had worn off, and they couldn't pass through Edom's territory. They weren't allowed to attack Edom, right? So therefore Hashem had to take them through the northeast, through Sichon and Og. And therefore, Reuven and Gad saw this beautiful pasture land on Eber HaYarden, and therefore they wanted it. So we see, the Tziv says, Avera Gereris Avera, to the extent that you do something wrong, you don't even realize the ripple effects the Meraglim had. The Meraglim, yes, they had a ripple effect of the 40 years in the Midbar, but there were further ripple effects. Because of that traveling in the Midbar, Reuven and Gad lived on Eber HaYarden, and because Reuven and Gad lived on Eber HaYarden, therefore they were exiled earlier and so forth. Avera Gereris Avera. And so too with us. You know, we need to be mindful that an Avera we do is not just in the moment. It impacts where our lives go and our spouses' lives go and where our kids' lives go. They all go from that point forward. And usually it's not for the better. And I know this isn't Parsha Shlach, but the Torah saw fit to remind us about the Meraglim and its ripple effects now, in Parshas Devarim, right before Tisha B'Av, which is the ultimate ripple effect from the act of the Meraglim that we still feel today, right? The ultimate ripple effect of the Meraglim is Tisha B'Av. Atem b'chisem b'chiyah shochinam. To remind us how wary of averos we need to be, not just from their in-the-moment, you know, side effects, their harm, but the damage they can do long-term. And if we can embody this, if we can learn from this yisod, mir t'shem, we should be zocha to nothing but Yeshua and Simcha for ourselves and all of Klal Yisrael. So that's, again, teaching us the ripple effects. Why are the Meraglim brought in this week's Parsha? Because it teaches us the ripple effects that the Meraglim had even 40 years after the effect, and the connection to Tisha B'Av, which is the ultimate ripple effect of the Meraglim that we still experience this day. Last idea for tonight. So we've now covered several points of chizik from the Parsha. Some of them already, by their very nature, are connected to Tisha B'Av. But just to finish tonight's chabur with the remaining few minutes we have, one dedicated Tisha B'Av idea that I think we can all take a lot of chizik from. So we all know the Shabbos Chazon. the Shabbos of seeing, the Shabbos of vision. You know, the Kedushas Levi says famously, why is it called Shabbos Chazon? He says, because every Jew who wants it, if they connect to it, is shown a vision of the third base of Mikdash from a distance. If a Jew, if a person connects to Geula on this Shabbos, they're actually Zocha to witness on some level, on some metaphysical level, what the third base of Mikdash would look like. Many different Mahalkim on this idea of Chazon, of seeing. I want to go a different route, though. There's a Gemara in Megillah, on Hamad Beis, that discusses a year where Tisha B'Av fell out on Shabbos, just like it is this year, and says the Gemara, Bikesh Rebbe Lakor Tisha B'Av Shechal B'Shabbos. Rebbe said his shita was no nidcha on Sunday. Just skip it outright. We go, Sunday will be a regular day. There's no nidcha. Why? Hoil v'idchi idchi. Once it's already a nidcha, once it's already pushed off from the actual calendar date of Tes Adar because of Shabbos, let it remain pushed off. And in those circumstances, in those years, we shouldn't have any fasting or sitting on the floor or any of the other, you know, inuyim b'chlal. But the Gemara tells us, v'lo hodu lo chachamim. The Chachamim didn't agree with Shitas Rebbe, and we don't paskin that way. And therefore, in years like ours, where Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos, we do have a Nidche Tisha B'Av that is fully observed the following day on Sunday, on the 10th of Av. So the Nesiva Shalom, the Slonim Rebbe, has a great understanding of this Gemara, a great pshat on this Gemara, and it's worthwhile to contemplate, to marinate in this idea over the next few days. Because why? Especially because we ourselves are going to experience a Shabbos Tisha B'Av this year, just like they experienced that year in this Gemara Megillah. And he says as follows. What's the pnimius of Shitas Rebbe? What was his Havamina? Why do you want to uproot Tisha B'Av altogether? So the Slonimer uses a play on words. Bikesh Rebbe la'akor Tisha B'Av shechal b'Shabbos. Doesn't mean that Rebbe wanted to uproot Tisha B'Av, la'akor, but rather that Rebbe wanted to make that Tisha B'Av of that year that fell out on Shabbos into the Iker of Tisha B'Av, la'akor, for the lashon of Iker. That is the Iker Tisha B'Av. In other words, a Shabbos Tisha B'Av should be the highest level of all Tisha B'Avs possible, and that we push all the inuyim aside, the fasting, the kinos, the sadness, all of it is pushed away, and instead we eat, and we drink, and we sing, and we're very much besimcha. That was Shitas Rebbe, that says Rebbe, that Shabbos experience, the experience of Shabbos Tisha B'Av, should be the Iker Tisha B'Av, its deepest essence, as a genuine moed, right? Tisha B'Av, we know that after Mashiach comes, Tisha B'Av is a moed. That's the essence of the moed. And once we experience that ikar on the highest of levels, the pinnacle of what Tisha B'Av can be, why should we bother with having a nidche on Sunday? That's really what Rebbe was saying. The whole v'itchi itchi. Once you've accomplished the ikar, why are you doing the tuffel? Why do we need the tuffel if you have the ikar? That's what Shitas Rebbe is basically saying. And yes, you may say, but we don't paskin that way. V'lo hodu lo chachamim. So we don't paskin like Rebbe, and in fact, we do keep a nidche on Sunday. So why is that? So the Nesiva Shalom addresses that, and he says, because observing the highest level of Tisha B'Av, the Iker, doesn't absolve us of the Tufel, of the lesser level too. There's still a tremendous virtue in mourning over the past, in all the various inuyim, because mourning over the past, and fasting, and the kinos, and so forth, brings a person to that tshuka, that yearning for the future. So Tisha B'Av, as we know it, with the inuyim and the fasting, is still a very valuable tool to bring about the desired outcome. And of course, kumzitz, that's a very, you know, way to bring about the desired outcome, which is the geula. So l'maisa, we still observe a nidcha on Sunday, but be'etzem, even the chachamim really are moda that the highest level of Tisha B'Av is still Shabbos. We do observe it still on Sunday because there's a virtue in it, but the highest level is Shabbos. So something for us to really think about this upcoming Shabbos, which is the 9th of Av, that we are all experiencing Tisha B'Av the way it was meant to be. That this Shabbos, we should think about that tomorrow night, Shabbos, that this is Tisha B'Av the way it was meant to be. Not just a mourning for the past, because there's no Avelis on Shabbos, there's no mourning on Shabbos, but rather in the spirit of Shabbos Kodesh, Tisha B'Av transforms itself into a yearning for the future, a yearning to be closer with Hashem. That's the highest level. That's the Iker. Bikesh Rebbe La'akor Tisha B'Av Shechal B'Shabbos. And we need to be mindful of that and make this Shabbos, especially this Shabbos. It would behoove us to make especially this Shabbos into a microcosm of that reality with extra simcha, extra divrei Torah, obviously following all the halachos in the afternoon, whatever it is, but in terms of extra singing, extra divrei Torah, extra zmiros, and of course, the most important thing, an extra effort to connect with Hashem on a go-forward basis. And in that spirit, we should celebrate Tisha B'Av in the same way every year, as the moed, as the beautiful yontif it truly is, with simcha and warmth and amir to Hashem, be zochet to see with our own eyes Nechama Sion and Binyan Yerushalayim alongside with the rest of Klal Yisrael. And with that, I wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos and a meaningful Tisha B'Av.